Good afternoon, Mood Group friends. This is Marcus with you again on another interesting and very informative episode of Packaging Perspectives. Today we're going to talk about somebody who started a packaging company and then subsequently sold it. And we're going to go through his background as to how he got to that point, his experiences of building a company in a new country, and then subsequently an M&A and then an exit strategy, which we thought would be very interesting to those that are either contemplating doing something similar or have always dreamt of doing something similar. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Mohammed Afzal. Mohammed is now a packaging consultant based in Dubai, but as he'll go on to explain, his career has taken him across several countries. He's far more interesting to listen to than I am, so I'm going to stop waffling on and hand over to Mohammed. So Mohammed, welcome to the podcast. You very kindly, as a subscriber to our podcast and a recipient of our podcast, hit the apply to be a guest button, which we encourage everyone to do. And you said, I've got a very interesting story, which I'm sure people would like to hear. And when I read about it, I thought immediately, absolutely, let's introduce you to our audience. So please introduce yourself, Mohammed, and tell us your story.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's an honor and pleasure. And, you know, once I saw this podcast, it was very interesting, especially in the packaging industry. So my journey started right back in 1995 when I arrived into the United Arab Emirates. And actually, I came to join a company in the chemical and adhesives, but the same company already had some sort of a relationship with another packaging company. And that was my first introduction to the metal packaging. That was the first time that I ever saw how the cans are being made, although that I was using the cans in the past like anybody else, but I had absolutely no idea that, you know, how they are made. So I worked for that company for about a year and a half, right into the middle of 1996. I learned a lot of things, you know, when it come to the, you know, so-called double seam and single friction and double friction in the olden time. I think most probably people must be laughing that, you know, we had that butterfly overlap as compared to the super Vima welding or whatnot. So that was my learning journey. Since I had the technical background as an engineering graduate from the electrical technology, so obviously it was easy for me to pick. So that was my introduction to the lovely field of industrial packaging, especially the metal packaging. Then in 1996, I joined officially to this chemical company. And I continued to work in that chemical company, but I always had a great interest in the other company that they also partner up with. It's called Middle East Cans. And, you know, I was a regular visitor and I used to look at the welding machine, the flanging machine and the bottom seaming machines and whatnot always fascinated me. So that was something you can say that you, the love at the first sight, I would say, with the packaging was very interesting for me, to be very honest. So fast forward to 2002, I was presented with an opportunity. I was quite young, ambitious. I was given an opportunity to migrate to Canada. And to be honest, I didn't realize that it is such a cold country.
Can I just interrupt you for 1 minute there, Mohammed, just for the benefit of the audience? You told me that the adhesives company that you were working for, NAPCO Adhesives, I think, had this subcontracting relationship with a canning manufacturer. And there was a call for somebody on your side, the client side, to get involved with that partner, wasn't there?
That is correct. That is correct as well.
And so you were nominated as the person that knew the most about it to go
yeah,
in,
very I think. Because
there's a very key point, I think, in your career, which was you were working for a manufacturer of a finished product which contained packaging. And because of supply chain issues, I think you were asked to go in and get involved with that partner and help sort out some of their processes. Am I right?
Well, that's absolutely correct. You know, I was fundamental into linking the both companies together, and that's how the journey started. But obviously, I learned a lot, and I was quite young. So in 2002, I was presented with an opportunity to migrate to Canada. So I went to Canada, and since always I had the packaging in my background, in my thoughts. So I was almost ready. When I went into Canada, I was ready to start something of my own. So again, for those as an entrepreneur or those like young guys that who are listening, there's a moment that you will always feel that you are ready for it, and that opportunity comes, and you should go for it. I think it's very important to take the right decision at the right time. So I started back in 2002 a can company in Canada with the name of Allied Can Manufacturing. And my biggest challenge was that I was not aware of a lot of things and a lot of competition into Canada. So I was thrown into a situation kind of by myself that where I didn't do a lot of due diligence. But again, my feeling is that if you do a lot of due diligence, a lot of surveys, competition, what is around in the competition and whatnot. So probably that sometimes basically discourages you to start anything because you get fearful.
You can know too much.
sometimes some of the decisions that you take in your life, being a little bit of naive, I would say, sometimes help you in order to get into something. And then, obviously you face challenges that you would face anyway. So that was something that I really struggled till 2009, because I had a semi-automatic production line from India where a single person would sit on each machine, and we were producing maximum 10 to 15 cans a minute. So it was basically an economic suicide. But I really survived that very difficult time between 2002 to 2009. And the thought process was that, what I'm going to do. So I was a kind of a person that who had the thought process that, never give up, fight till the last. So if you are in the game, you will find out the solution. So this is another key that, if you're in the game, just remain in the game and there are going to be solutions. So in 2009, I was presented with an opportunity from the government of Canada, because we were just getting out of the recession, if you remember correctly, 2008, 2009 meltdown, yeah. When it comes to the properties and other things. So every business was affected. So the Canadian government started a program, and they started a program, and they were giving us some sort of helping hand to the manufacturer in order to revive their economy, and especially the manufacturing sector. I took that opportunity and I invested into the automation. So had I not gone into 2002 and faced all those difficulties and problems, probably would have spent that money on something else. But I spent that money right on what exactly was needed. So I spent that money on the automation and I automated. So I went to China. Believe me, I went to the smaller towns. I went, I traveled by train. I traveled by buses. Because I really wanted to go and reach out to the manufacturer, the real manufacturer, not the trading companies. And it was a very interesting journey. So fast forward to 2011, what was very interesting, and I think it was a game changer, that, and again, the thing is that if you are in the business, if you are in the game, so the business continued to tell you that, what you need the next. So I was making the general can line cans starting from a half a pint up to one US gallon. But all the client and the customer, they continue to ask me that if I can make and supply them the steel pails. And this was something that, to be honest, I had no experience, but I start looking into it. And then I venture myself and the company into making the UN rated steel pails. Since I had time from 2009 to 2011, I visited a lot of companies who were making the steel pails. I went to the Europe because I was a regular visitor of Metpack in Germany. I was a regular visitor of PACX show in different countries. And I contacted a lot of experts that, how to make the best pail. So my ambition was that I wanted to make not only the best pail, but at a very cost effective price as well. Because sometimes, you can make a product, and if you make a product and then this product is not sellable, then what's the point? So I actually, did a lot of research, look at the different kind of equipment, contacted a lot of, the steel pail manufacturer. So was able to actually produce finally a steel pail that which was basically one of the highest UN rated in the entire of North America. And the one of the credit I would take partly is, and the partly is because majority of the companies they were using an older equipment. And I had a luxury of buying a newer equipment because I was just coming into the business. So I think that actually really helped in order to design the equipment in such a way that I can not only produce the highest UN rated steel pail in North America, but also the lowest cost as well by
You
going a
were a
thicker gauge.
disruptor. You were a disruptor, my friend.
Well, I was. And let me tell you, Marcus, that had I not gone into the steel pail, probably this M&A with the largest Latin packaging company would not have happened. So sometimes you think that your expertise is let's say into a certain area, but and you're not the expert on the other area, but probably the other area might have a better chance of attracting another company towards you. So once I got the top UN rating in North America, so obviously I started shipping all over the world, basically a lot of Latin and Central American countries, because the American companies they also had the branches in all the Latin and Central American companies, and that's how my packaging reach over there. The other solution that I brought into the industry was amazing, that I didn't realize, to be honest, until people start telling me. So there were used to be a different rated steel pails. So let's say they will have to keep, let's say, Y1.1 up to Y2.5, and there are four or five SKUs in between. So what they will have to do is they have to keep a different SKUs on the floor in order to package the different kind of a product. And sometimes they can make a mistake as well. My pail was a single pack, the highest rated UN pail at the lowest cost, so which basically replaced all five or six, seven SKUs on the floor, and people loved it. That not only that I replace all their SKUs, and they usually get mixed up, and they can package a wrong product into the wrong packaging as well, and then it basically attract a lot of difficult penalties and difficult situations, but also was at the lowest. So fast forward to 2015, because in 2011, when I started making the steel pail, I kind of made a mistake that I formed another company. And under that company, I started making the steel pails. But by 2015, my entire staff, the admin staff, was crying. The reason is because they have to maintain two different book of accounts, and we have to file the separate taxation and whatnot. So in 2015, I have decided to amalgamate both the companies together in order to make it easy for everyone, because sometimes you make certain decisions as a management that you want to have two separate companies. But I always recommend that if you can grow under the umbrella of a single company, I think that's the best way to go for the controlling purposes. In 2017, I receive a call from Costa Rica, and to be very honest, at that time, I never been to Costa Rica. I even don't know where is Costa Rica. And a gentleman just called me. I already traveled at that time probably more than 30 countries, but never had an opportunity to travel to this beautiful country. So I receive a call from the M&A guy, and he said, like, we are looking to do an M&A and make a cooperation with another company because we want to come into North America. The reason they wanted to come into North America was because one of their competition already came into North America and started a manufacturing plant in the United States. And they didn't want it to start from the zero, so they wanted to come under the skin of a company that was relatively smaller, but technically sound company, basically the company that which can grow. So I had absolutely no idea. I mean, it was a very large group. They have 11 different plants in 11 different countries. And I was totally shocked and surprised. They had the technology, they had the money, they had the resources. So I said, well, this is going to be a perfect fit. So when the opportunity was presented to me, I grabbed the opportunity because I knew that, you know, this company can help me to grow. And another very interesting thing was that when I automated back in 2009, I was able to only automate that much, and I was able to achieve only 20 to 25 cans a minute. When it comes to the packaging, especially metal packaging, you need a lot of equipment. And, you know, I didn't have that much money to do that. When I used to go and visit a lot of different companies, so I would see in front of my eyes, it's just like comparing different cars, that you have a smaller car and someone has a bigger and a luxury car. You always wish that, you know, I wish if I can afford a Lamborghini or a Maserati or all this, you know, that kind of a thing. So when I was used to walk into the different plants and look at the can manufacturer basically producing more than 200 cans a minute, and I was only 10%. So I was only used to wish that, you know, oh, you know, if I get an opportunity, I would like to produce that many cans. But, you know, I didn't have enough resources in order to do that. So my dream come true that once we got the M&A with this company, I was able to produce, you know, I wanted to see that moment, and I was able to produce more than 200 cans a minute. And I cannot tell you, I know that, you know, sometimes different things brings happiness. Money is one of those factors. But for me, I really wanted to see the company grow, and having those fully automated line with inline testers, fully automatic palletizing, and go out and compete with the big boys, because you know, I was an underdog. I was not competing with them. And usually if the bigger boys comes in, I was used to withdraw myself because I knew neither I had the capacity or the technology and the prices as well. So I, till that time, I never visited PPG, Chevron William, you know, sorry to those guys, you know, at that time, that, you know, because I didn't have the capacity and did not want to supply all my supply to one company as well.
Sure.
So that was dream come true. They structured the M&A in a very smart way, I must say. And I think partly it was me, because I wanted to see the glory of my company. I wanted to see that, you know, once, you know, you come under the umbrella of a large group and, you know, they give you the finances, they give you the technology, they give you the help, and how this really things shape up. So it was kind of known and a kind of unknown. So we sign a management agreement so with them that, you know, I diluted myself, but I basically was appointed as the CEO of the entire North America. And I happily accepted that because I really wanted to go and punch in the stomach of my competition, that I was unable to do that. So I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people who are listening here in the metal packaging must be laughing, because the thing is that I think you get that feeling that, you know, like once you are in the UFC ring, I mean, you don't look at the money. I think you basically look that, you know, you really want to punch this guy very hard and put them on the floor.
Yeah.
So when I was used to lose business, like, you know, they were used to go and pick up a business under my nose, and there's nothing that, you know, what I can do. And I was like very weak at that time. And I said, well, a time would come. And I lived for that time in order to see that, you know, I can walk into that company and undercut them and get their share of a business. And that's exactly what I did.
Well done. Well done. And your experience of doing an M&A, from the sounds of it, as you say, it was structured in such a way that you stayed on for a fixed period of time until you finally exited. For anybody sort of following a similar path to you, where you started something, then, as you say, you reached a point where you needed to automate, you automated, that enabled you to go into markets that you hadn't previously been in. You managed to develop some USPs in that market. Fantastic. You attracted the attention of somebody bigger that wanted to come in and take a foothold in that market and not have to do all the work that you've done. fantastic. You now start to get an additional return on all the risk that you've taken and evolutionary time that takes to get to that stage. And it takes a lot out of you as well, you know, not just business wise, but personally. You know, you've got family that come along with you and are patiently covering every milestone with you. Suddenly now, as you say, you've reached the point where they were interested in buying you and probably made it worth your while. All of that, any sort of tips for people, any sort of the word according to Mohammed, you know, I would always say do this, or have patience, have vision, whatever it is. And also the structure of the acquisition, anything there that you would have done differently with hindsight, or were you very pleased with the way it went? What tips do you give?
Well, Marcus, I mean, you know, a lot of interesting questions, and I have a lot of interesting answer, to be very honest. I'm a very, very good question that you're asking. I can see that, you know, with your past experience. Well, I think there are stages in the life. So when I came, I was a young graduate in the UAE. I basically concentrated only on myself in order to learn. Excellent few things, and I think that was the right thing that I have done. When I started the business, I kind of thought initially that, you know, I started too early, too fast. But I think, I think it's better that you start early because you are young, you have a lot of energy, and you don't have a lot of responsibilities too. So if something goes wrong, it's not as detrimental as you do any decision at the later stage of the life. So I would say to anyone that who's, let's say, at that age that, you know, I was like, let's say, around about in my late 20s or early 30s, if you get an opportunity to start something, that's the ideal age. If you have an experience as well, I think that's the most important thing. Starting a company, because of course, you know, I was criticizing myself that, you know, I didn't do my due diligence, I didn't do a lot of survey and whatnot. And I realized, and I would say to a lot many people that, you know, if you know something, I mean, don't do it over. Like when you go, I mean, you will always find a competition. You will always find something that which is going to drag you back and whatnot. So if once you do it over, then basically, you know, you will say no. You know, I mean, lot many people have done a lot of survey, lot of market analysis and something like that. More you do it, more fearful you become. So sometimes it's better that, you know, you strike a little bit of a balance. I didn't do, to be very honest. Like, you know, I think I would not advise someone to do that, like what I did, but a little bit of a due diligence, and then you just go into this, because business actually tends to teach you a lot of things. My semi-automatic production line always taught me to go into a fully automatic production. Then the customers will teach you a lot of things, and you need to be open in order to listen to them. The other question is, because once you built up something and you start doing okay, it's very difficult to let it go. And someone actually quoted me in the M&A that, do you know that selling a company is like selling yourself? Again, I think I was a little bit naive, and I, you know, thanks to myself that, you know, I've been naive too many times. And I said, well, yeah, you know, kind of, I understand, you know, giving up a control and whatnot. It's not easy to give up a control. I mean, it's the only thing that, you know, like you have a car and you don't value that one. The day you don't have one, then, you know, you feel that, oh my God, you know, I used to go do groceries, go whenever I want to go over there. And then you feel a lot of disabilities. But having said that, when an opportunity comes knocking on your door, you give it a very, very serious thought to it. So when this opportunity came to me, I basically had, you know, major three things that I considered in the M&A. Number one was that I was obsessed that I wanted to grow. I wanted to throw, you know, 200 cans a minute. And I know that, you know, a lot of people must be laughing. It sounds like a gun. It goes like tak, 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 tak. You know, this sound was like a music to me. And I wanted to have that music in my company every single day. So you have to pay a price. You know, if you dream something, you have to pay a price. That was the one thing that I negotiated with them, and they were willing to invest. And I knew that, you know, they aligned with what I wanted to do. The second thing was that I wanted to have a recognition. I want it to be something as a company that, you know, not a company that nobody knows about that company. And the third thing is, who doesn't like cash? You know, if someone is coming in and cashing you out and, you know, taking all the financial worry that, you know, you don't have to worry about anything on a personal side or even on a professional or a company side, I think that's awesome that, you know, like you have, you know, you have your paid off home and paid off car and you have got, you know, some stack of money sitting in your account and you don't have to worry about your children's education and other things and whatnot. And I think it's a wonderful feeling that, you know, it's, you know, sometimes it's good. And you basically more focus on something that you want to achieve. And even for the company, you want to do something, you want to, you know, bring in a bigger raw materials, you want to produce more or whatnot. So, I mean, that was kind of a thing that, you know, I got into. Now,
were you totally happy with the terms of the sale, or is there anything, given your experience now, that you would say, okay, with hindsight, I might have done this or done that slightly differently, or did everything go exactly?
Very good question. I was actually coming towards that because this is something, because M&A have three timings, I would say. So there's a time that you are actually negotiating. The M&A has not happened yet. Then during the M&A, you go through a different thought process. And then after the M&A. So before doing M&A, I was more focused at what they're going to do, if they align with me, okay, and what is going to happen with the company. During the M&A is basically just like, I would say, two ship colliding in the sea. You can't do anything other than the fact that then just wait. If you have already signed an agreement, don't panic, just let it happen. Because majority of the M&As I have seen that they are fall apart in the implementation part. They say, no, this is not something that we agreed, or this is not what happened. So I kind of let that portion go. The post M&A is something that you come to a new reality. The reality number one is that you lost the control. You have to do the things as somebody else does. And there will be a lot of different protocol that you need to follow. So basically, technically, you become an employee. I mean, let me be very blunt, you know. So especially, you know, a person like me, even when I was in an adhesive company, I was pretty much a very good decision maker, you know, over there. I was taking a lot of decisions. And when I started my own company, so until 2017, you know, was almost like 15 years. So you get used to of, you know, certain freedom and certain things and whatnot. So I would advise, looking back, that if you are not obsessed to see the glory of the company, that, you know, what happens after M&A, and you have an opportunity to leave at the end of the M&A, please do that. The reason is because the issues and the problems start from there, because you have a certain way of running the company. Somebody else is going to come in, implement SAP, implement this, implement that. So a lot of protocols, a lot of controls for a good reason. But if you're not used to of that, there will be a lot of administrative stuff and other things and whatnot. Now, I'm happy that, you know, they didn't, you know, throw a lot of snowballs on me, because I was very busy in installing lines, doing all those technical things and whatnot. So I would say that, you know, as an entrepreneur, if you get paid, you got cash, go and do something else.
Yeah.
You know, live your dream. Yeah.
Don't structure a deal which says, okay, but you've got to be here for another 5 years or something like that. Do a slightly more clean deal where you, after a respectable period of time and due diligence, you have your exit.
I would like to add that in majority of the cases, that any sizable M&A which is going to happen, you're going to have some sort of a non-compete. So, I mean, technically, you can't do the same business that you've been doing in the past, okay? And then probably it's better. It depends, obviously, that you know how much cash you got. So that's another thing. Sure. But I would say that, you know, when you are thinking of M&A or somebody approach you, if it's not like with the speed of light, because sometimes they come very, very fast and you have to take very fast decisions. But if you've been thinking, then always have a plan B, that let's suppose that you get paid cash. And you know, you are talking about, in majority of the cases, Emily, you are talking about big cash. Because I mean, usually another thing I must say, that you know, there is always an industry multiplier. So for example, for adhesive, it's going to be a different multiplier. For packaging, is going to be a different multiplier. So it's always EBITDA, which is your earning, you know, before depreciation and interest and the taxes. And you know, don't go on gross profitability or net profit profitability, not at all. Always negotiate based on EBITDA, and then based on EBITDA, you know, look for a better multiplier. Negotiate a better multiplier, and that's how you will get a better cash.
Do that.
So once you got your cash, then just try to detach yourself. I know it's very difficult to achieve than saying that, you know, a company that you built, it is your child, it's your baby, and you know, you've been there every single day. But I would say that, you know, let it go.
And well, it brings us that word, those pearls of wisdom, bring us comfortably on, I think, to the current day. And the next thing I was going to say, which is, I can see and understand that your handover period was completed and you exited from the business and came back to Dubai. The company has continued to go from strength to strength. So your job was well done, both in the inception, the creation, the establishment, the ramping up, the building, and then seeing it over successfully to a bigger parent who can then take it to the next level. You've done your 5 years, you've come out, and now you have all this wisdom, both not only in cans and packaging and different countries, but also M&A activity as well. So in your new guise, Mohammed, as a consultant, you're now, if I'm not mistaken, able to bring all this perspective and insight to anyone contemplating doing something similar, you know, at a stage where they're either going into automation and they're not sure what to do and where and how, or they've gone even further than that and looking at M&A. Perhaps give us some, you know, today, what can Mohammed do for you today? Where are you at today?
Well, you know, a very good question. And I really thought about it, you know, before venturing into something. And I look back, and, you know, I'm a very humble person, to be very honest, but I thought I achieved something over a period of time, you know, growing from very, you know, self-made, you know, working for a certain company, starting another manufacturing company with a very limited resources, and eventually making the single largest rigid industrial packaging manufacturer in the entire of Canada. So that was the end, and making a pail, which is even today is the single pack best UN rated pail in the entire of North America. So when I look back, I said, well, okay, I have to give it back to the society. I have to give it back to the packaging. I'm very blessed that, you know, what I achieve, and, you know, God been very kind to me. So I sit down and I said, okay, what is that I'm going to do? So now any packaging manufacturer, now my experience basically is from the structure point of view now. I mean, any company who's into the packaging, or matter of fact, any other business, I have an ability to think critically and put the system and the processes in place that where the company grows, and I learn from all my mistakes. So today, if anyone in the packaging is looking for something, I usually say that in the packaging, especially in the metal packaging, that you have got 3 M, which is machine, material, and manpower or men. These are critical, and the selection of the equipment is far more important than anything else that you pick up. The reason is because if you pick up a good quality equipment, and the equipment usually in all packaging is quite expensive, not having enough money have given me an opportunity to travel all around the world, more than 50 countries, look at the equipment manufacturer, for a very simple reason that, you know, for example, if I had the money to buy Ferrari, okay, here's the money, where is my Ferrari? Now, I wanted to build a Ferrari, but I didn't have the money to afford a Ferrari. So for that reason, I had to travel. For example, I traveled China more than 50 times and then stopped counting. So I was a regular visitor in the exhibition. I was used to go on all plants and whatnot. So I think that the million-dollar question is that, the equipment, you can start making even 1,000 cans a minute, but the equipment is very expensive. My expertise comes in that I can buy you the equipment as compared to the European equipment at half the price, literally half the price with the same technology and same efficiency. Then the second thing is whenever you are selecting an equipment in any packaging, then become the raw material, be it a plastic, for example, or corrugates and whatnot. If you go high speed, then you need very specialized materials. Otherwise, you're going to generate a lot of scrap. So you're going to lose a lot of money there. Then the third thing is that as you go very high speed and automation, you need very skilled people in order to not only handle your equipment, but also your raw materials. So you need very specialized people in a very special training to them that how they are going to handle those materials and make the good decision. So now this also gave me an opportunity to connect with wonderful people around the world that they are amazing and they are doing amazing job. And probably they are looking for some change or they are looking for some more opportunities and whatnot. So this was like one thing. Now this was only from the operational side, you can say, or a technical side. Then when I got into the M&A, I learned totally different. Totally different skill that I to be very honest, many of the accountants must be watching and laughing. I even don't know what the EBITDA stand for when I started the M&A. And then I was used to ask them like, how you separate that? They say, okay, you have a net profit, you add everything back, the depreciation, the interest, the taxes, and everything, and that's where you arrive into the EBITDA. Then there is an industry multiplier. That what is an industry multiplier? It's basically a globally. So you should look for that industry multiplier. And I can help people how to. There's a lot of emotion involved too. So I've gone through that emotional stress, you can say that, where a lot of roller coaster things happening. But I must tell something that don't be scared of the skyscraper roller coaster because I have seen that, the children, they go first time, they're very scary, but they want to go over and again. So once you have done it, you enjoy it. You said, ah, it's a fun thing,
You've got
Yeah,
the appetite now.
let's do it again. And it's rewarding as well. So my recommendation would be that, any business that you start, take help. I know that you have a lot of experience sitting in front of me. The help doesn't cost you that much. It seems and it look like, a lot of money, but believe me, the experienced people can save your company from making the detrimental mistakes that you would be making. And once you go in, yes, go full-hearted. Difficulties will come. If you are a billionaire even, you will have difficulties. So it's not about money, it's about the process. So be patient, do your job every single day. Don't skip your job. Do your job what you're supposed to do every single day. Grow your company to the extent that you start pinching in the eyes of the competition and make them come to you. And then you have the power to negotiate that M&A. And then you dominate that M&A and again hire a good M&A person that who actually have done an M&A. There are so many people I have a lot of respect for the accountants. I have a lot of respect. They're amazing people. But they have read in the books. They have probably implemented certain things. But get someone that who have done it because he can relate. He can give you the right advice at the right time. And once you are actually in this entire process, you are in that circle. And oftentimes you make a lot of emotional decisions or wrong decisions and the choice of the word. So for that reason, you always need a person in between, which basically can connect both parties and get you to an agreement, which is basically beneficial for the both, not only one-sided.
and takes out emotions and things like that, like you said. I mean, principally, as you pointed out, it's all about technology, processes and people, isn't it? And, you know, if I put my little hat on for Mood Group just for a brief moment, I'm talking to people all day long about their technology and their processes, and they're often very on top of that. But people make a big difference to any situation. You're bringing along insight and experience and being able to help people make decisions which will perhaps shortcut certain things. And obviously, when it comes down to providing people, and in any packaging business, this is where we specialize. So we're always very interested in helping anyone with the people that they will need, whether it's the actual employer themselves or somebody like yourself that's been brought in as a consultant to help advise them how to be more efficient, run better, go into new markets, etc. We're linking up with people like yourselves all the time to help bring those people on board that will drive the business up to the next level. So, well, thank you very much, Mohammed, for all your insight and experience. It just leaves me to say, if anybody has a packaging business that they're either wanting, you know, there's an expression I use a lot, which is you don't know what you don't know. And if you want somebody to come along and help take the don't know out of it, certainly your experience in the field that you've spent a lot of your business in, cans and canning, I'm sure you'd be the first to say, well, I know that one inside out. So anybody in canning, give me a call if you're looking at expanding or going into new markets or indeed an M&A. And I know what happens in one packaging discipline often can fall into others as well. So contact Mohammed either directly or through us, and we'd only be too pleased to make the introductions. Thank you very much for sharing your experience and pearls of wisdom with our audience. I'm sure lots of people are going to find that very, very interesting. And thank you, Mohammed, for your time today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was amazing. And, you know, I wanted to tell my story to my all colleagues in the packaging and the other businesses. And I appreciate the opportunity you provided to me today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.